Drunk on Comics Special Edition Interviews for Motor City Comic Con 2015. Due to some technical problems, having a lot of fun, and a little inebriation. Nope, scratch that. A lot of inebriation. These are the interviews we have from the convention. Lance Henriksen, Ted McKeever, Tom Rainey, Joe Prado, and Tim Townsend. Hopefully this will get you through the week until our next scheduled podcast.
This is the moment we've been waiting for.
This is pretty much how we start every podcast. We actually just pretty much start talking while we hit record and start talking.
So, it's cool. I love it.
Derek and Tony here with Mr. Lance Henriksen, famous for countless movies. And one thing that surprised us to an amazing degree was his comic book, To Hell You Ride. And so, Lance, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
I'm speechless at the moment.
It's going to be a great interview now.
Great interview. I'm speechless. No. That was a thing of passion to write that, because it was an actual event. I had gone up to Telluride, and it was the end of the highway. And back then, I was just a kid, and I was hitchhiking, and I wound up there. And I'm sitting. I wasn't too much of a kid. I was 21, but I mean, I was still a kid. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the people in the bar. And this is the end of the road, and it wasn't the big ski resort that it is now.
Right.
There were some skiers, but not. It wasn't like it is now. And I thought, who are these people that are here? Why are they here? The bartender, all the girls, the guys, the locals, you know. And the place was pretty empty, this beautiful bar, an old-fashioned bar. And I thought, oh, shit, they're reincarnated miners and hookers. That's what went through my mind. And I went, why am I thinking that? You know, and then suddenly I had looked around town, and there were old mine shafts back then and all that, you know, the debris from that and all of that. And I thought, I wonder who was here first. And then I found out that the Ute Indians were there.
Okay.
And they had, that was their summer hunting grounds. And that they had been run out, of course, by the white man, you know, who found a way to justify it. And then they found silver, and then the rest is history. It was raped, the whole thing. And then after that purge is over, then suddenly you have the next thing that was going to happen, and I had no idea what it was. You know, this is how my mind works. I mean, I just follow a fantasy world, and then I realized, wait a minute. There's a great line from Dylan Thomas, and it's, the line is, the ball I threw while playing in the park has not yet reached the ground. Mm. And I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, if there ever was a justifiable curse, this would be the place. And then I thought, wait a minute, the Native Americans don't do curses. They don't. But karma is another whole thing. I mean, things happen as a result of your behavior, you know. And so all of that wrapped up into this story. And then when I started telling my buddy Joe Madre about it, there were images of a, you know, horror film, but it was also stuff that in a way you were asking for, you know, the white man's guilt. What, even though we think we won all these wars, we didn't win. We're still paying for it. It's in our fiber. The guilt is in our fiber. And you know, it takes the form of, oh, global warming. We've got to do something about it. In other words, even if it's unproven, we're going to get on that bandwagon. We have the life expectancy of a housefly. How do we know this is global warming? We don't live that long. The clock that ticks for us, we're out like a housefly, a gnat. You know, the earth is a dog, and we're the fleas, and we're going to get shook eventually. So that's the way it is.
So now, when it comes to this, when it came to writing this book, I mean, you know, you first went through when you were 21. This book came out, about a year ago now?
Yeah.
And actually, it was just a little over a year ago, because I know it was right before here, last year, Motor City. This read like a movie.
Well, you nailed it, because that's exactly what I was going for. I mean, I even know who's going to play Two Dogs.
Okay.
Jason Momoa.
Oh, wow.
I really want him to be that guy, you know. So, and Jason's a friend. I know him. And, you know, because he's Hawaiian, and he's perfectly that, you know. I mean, even the name Two Dogs comes from a joke, a very trivial joke, you know.
Very familiar with the joke.
Yeah, so, and everybody is.
Yeah.
So I decided, look, I'm going to go directly at things. I'm not going to hide them or pretend they're mine or anything like that. But I do know a lot about a lot of Native American issues, and I've been always interested and always felt more akin to their dilemma, you know, to trying to understand it, you know.
Now, and Tom,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Tom Mandrake, he did the art on this. How well did he take your vision, and, like, how much influence did you have for him to do
that?
Oh,
my God. Tom, I love Tom Mandrake. He's one of the shyest people I know. We'd go to, after it came out, we'd go to interviews, and he would sit there and, you know, he's an artist. He doesn't want to talk. What is he? And I would do all the talking. But anyhow, but I would get his stuff in there, too, you know, that we talked about privately. But Tom, I met Tom at a show, and I loved his art. I mean, I always did. I love comics, period. Yeah. But Tom has a gift. He's a dramatist as well as a, you know, I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. And when Mike Richardson met me at a I think it was Long Beach Comic Con, and he hollered at me, "You want to do a comic class?" And I said, and I immediately thought of Telluride, and I said, yeah, I do. So then he sicked his editor on me. And then I had to negotiate with the editor how many comics. And I knew from the start that I wanted 5. So I said, I think I even said 10. And he said, oh, no, we can't do that. We can give you 3. And I said, 6. And he went, 4. And I went, 5, and it's a deal. And that's what we got, which is what I wanted originally. He thought he won. No,
so it's like it's basically like bartering or what do you call it when you go to the pawn shop?
Exactly, you know, exactly. Except that doesn't that make you sick when you see like porn stars? The hunger for the material bullshit. You know, I get sick watching them. You know, go because it's only about money, and what is money? Little piece of green paper looking for a new home. So it has no value, really.
I think
idea has value, though.
Yeah,
that's different.
That does. One of my favorite moments, actually, I've seen the show a few times, but my favorite was a woman went in, she goes, all right, she goes, you're going to say 5, I'm going to say 20. She goes, we're going to settle at 10, so let's just say 10 right now because I'm done.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's beautiful. I wish
all people
could
she had a goal.
Yeah.
She knew her goal.
Yeah.
Well...
Yeah.
Okay, so then finally the deal was made, and here's the way the deal went. I knew, Joe Mandrake and I knew that we wanted Tom Mandrake and no one else. That was it. So Sienkiewicz was high in the listing, but he's, you know, he's almost, we had to finish the comic within 2 years.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean. And I couldn't impose on my relationship with Sienkiewicz by saying, we have to have a deadline. You can't do that with him. He's a philosopher. He's all those things.
Yeah.
I had many glasses of Chardonnay with him and went into the ether, and it was the greatest stuff. We had conversations that were unbelievable. But anyway, Mandrake was really, really the one. And so they said, well, I'm sorry, we can't afford Mandrake. And I said, so I talked to Joe Mandrake, and we both agreed, all right, what you would have had to pay us as writers, you give to Mandrake, and I want $1
wow.
for each issue to seal the contract, because without any money, there's no contract.
Right.
So I did that, and the money went to Mandrake, which I'm grateful to pay.
Wow.
And so we worked on it for 2 years. I got $5. Joe Madrick got $5. And I don't even care what Tom Madrick got. Right. He was worth every brass razzoo, you know. So we end up Skyping 3 times a week. The sketches would come. We'd all discuss them. And then we would do things. I mean, it was like heaven for any artist that's going to do. When I'm an actor, I do what I call conspire with the director to do good work. It's a conspiracy,
okay.
And we conspired because the editor of Dark Horse kept interjecting and saying schedule, and of course we ignored him. You know, but we knew where we were going, but we didn't know quite how we were going to get there, and we needed the time, and we wanted to work in that way. And so so anyway, after 2 years, it was done. And we had gone through so many wonderful, elegant changes through it, learning and putting our souls and spirits on the line to do this thing. So we were happy. And honestly, I always thought it should be a movie from the very beginning. Because when I wrote it, originally, I wrote it in the Purple Onion Hotel in Telluride.
Okay.
I wrote a whole script in about 24 hours.
Now, where was your character?
Was mine?
What was your character going to be?
Originally, it was going to be an ex-Vietnam vet who was now one of the sheriffs of Telluride.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of deputies who were Native American. And you know, I never mentioned the tribe in the comic,
right?
Because I didn't want to insult that tribe, or drag them into something that was not a reality. But the truth of the story is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. Outside of Flagstaff, they're using recycled toilet water to make snow on the sacred mountains that are sacred to that tribe that lives there. What a fucking insult. Excuse my French.
Oh, no, you can use for as much total as insult. On our show.
Well, that's going on in so many levels all over the reservations.
Well, and the toxic snow, you know, in the comic was one of those things where it was something that I'd never thought of. And all of a sudden, you know, being Michiganders, and we deal with winter all the time.
Sure.
All of a sudden you're sitting there going, that's actually kind of terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Because
you wouldn't be able to see it, feel it, taste it until you start falling apart.
Yeah, and then you're stuck. You're stuck wherever you're at.
Yeah.
You know, until it's gone.
Insiders and outsiders.
Yeah.
That's the way the white man is. Insiders or outsiders. Us or them. You know what I mean? All that.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of people classified this as a horror book, but to me, it was more of a thriller than horror. It was terrifying because of the situation. But to me, and Tony, I mean, you...
Yeah, I would say, yeah, less horror, more thriller. Just, yeah, what you said.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things because it is kind of that mind fuck of, oh no, now what?
Now so, where's this going?
Yeah.
What's the outcome here?
Yeah. And even when it's gone, snow melts, what happens? Does the water have the same effect? And
what's going to happen? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. Like, if you really ask yourself about, like, Fukushima... What happened there? What is the long-lasting impact of that? Not only to the fish that people are eating, but to the water table and everything else. Are we going to adjust to it, or are we going to die from it, or are we? And to have the Japanese have, you notice there was no giant panics in Japan.
Right.
The people have this capacity for striving with respect and, you know, helping each other. It's a different culture. If it was California, you know, at Rio Seco or whatever it is, you would see people driving over each other to get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a different... we are a different construct. You know,
well, this could be the beginning of Godzilla. I mean, you know, the nuclear waste over there.
I mean, all horror and science fiction is like morality plays about something we are absolutely fucking terrified about or don't know how to come to terms with. How would we react? I mean, You know, so it's like I've done a lot of science fiction and horror, and I'm always sitting on the edge of the stage saying, how can I personalize this? I mean, what would I be doing? What am I thinking?
Well, I would say, I mean, one of the greatest franchises that I've loved is Aliens. And seeing you in those movies being the best android ever is...
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it really, to me, like, getting to talk to you right now is, like, one of those, like, kind of geek moments. I'm trying not to, you know,
it's a little surreal
like that, but yeah, yeah, but it's like one of those cool things of like,
I mean, I was watching you on the screen.
And how was that for being, because those were same thing, kind of, they were a horror movie, but they were also, the second was more of a thriller with sending in all the Marines and everything, and then going back to the roots in three. How were your takes on, like, how much fun did you have? I should say,
oh, I was in heaven, man. I really was. It was because I've done a lot of different budgets on a movie, and I remember that the phrase, once the train leaves the station and you're making a movie, it doesn't stop till you get to the end. And this is the one chance. You don't go back and make Aliens over again if you didn't do it right. You know, other aliens will come, but the fact is, this is it. And so if everybody is prepared as they possibly can be, a metaphor of that was when Jim called me and said, I don't know how I'm going to introduce Bishop. Whether he's up and everybody else is, you know, in suspended animation, or if he's, you know, we had a couple of conversations about it. And then he called me a month later and said, you know, the game we played, you know, as kids, you know, with a knife and, you know, between your fingers and stuff. And I said, oh, yeah, I played that. And he said, that's how I want to do it, right? So, okay, so now knowing him, this is what about preparation, so I'm not losing track.
But yeah.
I went and bought every knife you could imagine, switchblades, throwing knives, everything. And I worked with all of them because I knew he might go that one, and I hadn't done it. Put one on the table and say, that's the one I think we ought to use, and I already have one. I've already worked with
it. You really did...
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There's great stories about that. And one of them is he sped it up at one point, and it looked like shit. It looked phony as hell. There's one shot he has that's still sped up, and it's just my shoulder moving. But what happened is he actually called me in the middle of the night before we were leaving to go home. The movie was done. He said, we got to redo the knife trick. And Bill Paxton and I have been out shrinking, and we had fucking heads were swollen, you know, from goodbye beer, you know. So
we're not familiar with that at all.
I thought I had dreamt that he called me, because he called me in the middle of the night just to catch me before I got on the plane, right? So we're both asleep, and the driver's banging on the door, and we jump in what kind of car was that? It was like a... Anyway, it was a green car. But anyway, so we all jump in and we go back out to Pinewood and redo the scene. And I caught Bill on his little pinky, and he's a big baby, man. Anyway. but we did it. We did it that fast. What you're seeing, the knife between the fingers, that's how fast we were doing it.
Wow.
But then another thing happened, and this is the conspiracy aspect. Right before we did the scene, because Jim said, no, I want you to just do it as a demonstration. And I thought, that's bullshit. Yeah, in my mind. I said, Jim, what if I put my hand on Bill's hand? Now I'm protecting him, but I can still do the thing. And don't tell Bill. So that's what we did. I came in there, put my hand on his hand. He goes, wait, what are you doing, Bishop? And I go, bum, 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 here we go. And the scene came alive, and those are the miracles, and being ready to do something.
Yeah.
And that's that. Those, he's talking about a movie like that, and what is that experience? And the experience is that no matter what goes wrong, if you've prepared to a certain level, now we're supporting each other, so nothing really ever goes wrong. It's a search.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean. So that's what I live by.
How many people have asked you to do that?
Oh, shit. Everywhere. No. I had that happen twice in two different ways. One, when I did Dog Day Afternoon, I had shot Casals at the airport. That was my first movie. And I'd be in a restaurant in New York, and a guy would look at me from across the room and go, and I go, fuck. I don't know what, and I went, oh, it's the movie. Oh, shit.
Yeah, the little finger gun.
Yeah,
thing
I didn't know. Yeah, like, I'm going to shoot you, you know. But at first I went, what the fuck? You know, it was like, he's going to shoot me? Is that what he's telling me? No, it's the movie. Okay, got it. Okay, so now I'm good. But I have waiters come over and do it. A cop pulled me over once and said, he tapped the window and I rolled it down. I looked up and he goes, Bishop. And he goes, he gives me the pen. He says, do the knife trick for me, Bishop. And he says, get out of here. Just don't do it in front of me. You know what? Anyway, but anyway. But waiters and you name it.
No, it's being
it's sweet though. It's sweet. It's never.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, being an actor, you know, obviously that's, you know, a character that you played out of many. But as it going to the franchise, I love Prometheus being kind of a prequel, and Michael Fassbender taking being the first android in the Wayland system. How many people they got once they got the Bishop android? Then they were perfection.
Well, I saw Prometheus, and you know, I love Ridley Scott's movie. I loved Alien. I thought the guy's a genius in terms of the look. You could smell it. I mean, first time I saw it, I sat in the theater and said, this is the first A science fiction movie I've made. It was amazing.
Well, the look that Geiger gave.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Him.
Do you know I met Geiger when I was 16 in New York?
Really?
I swear to you, these are weird things. Oh. He was doing an exhibition of his paintings, and they were all aliens and necrosexuality, you know, and all that. And I'm walking off the street and standing there looking at his paintings, and I met him. And little did I know, I wasn't even an actor.
Yeah.
You know, I was a painter, and I saw the paintings, I went in. And years later, now I'm in the movie with his stuff that I looked at.
That's,
I mean,
amazing.
Isn't that weird? But it happened.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you're a big fan of comics, and obviously, I mean, you've named a couple people that, you know, a lot of people may not even know unless they're, you know, dive into it. How long have you been into comics? I mean, is this a lifelong thing for you? Or?
When I was a kid, my mother and father had divorced, right? And I would see my father from the time I was five or six, only like once. He was a seaman, so I only saw him once every 6 months. And what we used to do, we'd go to a store and I could buy all the comics I wanted. And I bought all of the Tales from the Crypt.
Okay.
All the real gory ones. I loved them.
Yeah.
They were beautiful. They're beautiful drawings. They never freaked me out. It was just a story, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we would get a hotel room, go to movies all day long. Like, back in the day, you could, you know, you go to four movies in a day. It wasn't like a big giant deal, you know. The only showing is at 11:15. Now you can walk in at any time, and they keep replaying it, so you're caught up. Anyway, so we go to movies until we had headaches. Then we would go and buy sandwiches, and go to a hotel that was right near the theater's district, and I read my comics, and he read his books. No,
that's
no shit.
Yeah, so do you still read comics? Or
sure.
Do you?
I run into them, you know.
Well,
I mean, I discover them. I just discover them. You know, I go to a comic book store and go, The Strain. They redid The Strain. I want to see that. You know what I mean? So,
Are we going to see you write in another comic? That's what I really
want to know. I don't know. You know, it took 2 years. That's a big jump. And in 2 years since, or the year since, I've done 5 movies. I mean, seriously, 5 movies. And about 3 shorts, very intense shorts. You know, I'm working all the time. And besides that, I'm in my pottery shop. And I'm making 32-inch platters.
Oh, wow.
That I design. I sculpt and paint, you know, I mean.
I'm learning you're the busiest man in the world.
It doesn't feel like that. It just feels all natural.
Well, it comes out.
One nourishes you in one way, and another one nourishes you in another way.
If you love what you're doing, you'll never feel busy. I mean,
no.
Not bogged down busy.
You know who you give the job to? The busiest man you know. Give him the job, and he'll get done.
Yeah.
It's true, man.
So.
Not the guy that's got nothing going on. You say, could you mind doing this? No, don't do it.
Well, Lance, I just want to say thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Shit, did I destroy the whole fucking thing talking?
No,
that's everything that we wanted.
If we didn't know that you, I guarantee you have people standing there waiting for you back at your booth. We could sit here and talk to you for hours, and we'd be happy as all to do it. But perfect.
Hey,
Lance,
buddy.
Thank you so much.
Thank
man.
You, man.
All right, guys, Derek here. Last day of the show, my voice is shot. It's been a blast. And one of the highlights of this Motor City for me is meeting Mr. Ted McKeever. Ted, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? You're doing good.
Yeah, I'm holding in. I'm holding in. But, hey, this has been such a fanboy dream come true to actually get to meet you, because I have been in love with your work, and I can't get enough of it. And our listeners know Super Animated Man probably the most, because that's what I've talked about most recent. But can you fill people in a little bit on that story? We'll kind of start there and then maybe work our way back.
Sure. Basically, where it stemmed from was I wanted to do a story that was kind of like apocalyptic, but not your typical, you know, like Terminator kind of thing. And I wanted to do a society that had a kind of like a mutated animal base, because I've always wanted to draw talking animals, basically. And from that, I started dealing like, well, let me make it kind of dark and have it be an origin story that you don't know what's going on. It kind of starts in the middle, kind of works your way back. Like, how did these animals get to be talking? What's going on in this town? And that was something I wanted to do, but I didn't have anything that tied it together. And I had this other idea that I wanted to do a story about a guy who was just at a point in his life, like myself, where you hit a certain age where you're okay. You don't worry about too many things other than, like, you know, life things. But the day, you know, I'm old, I'm getting older, you know, I'm losing hair, it's like, it's okay. You just come to accept that. So I want to have a guy who just wanted to live in the society that had changed and mutated into this, like, animal talking world. And he's just like, he's not trying to fight them. He's not trying to beat them up. He's not trying to, like, take over. He just wants to be left alone so he can eat and do his fishing. And they start getting paranoid, thinking, well, why is he so comfortable? Why is he so okay with everything? Which, the way the world is, you're kind of made into this panic mode of, you're not okay, something's wrong, you're not healthy, you're eating too much cheese, you're not eating enough red meat. And I want it to be where they're paranoid and he's just like, leave me alone. And so this whole kind of like conflict starts from that. And the whole story is about how he's kind of drawn back into being that person that he didn't want to be, which is actually deal with stuff that's going on around.
Yeah.
And so that pretty much was, you know, it all kind of came together from like three different storylines.
Yeah, well, and you kind of mentioned that, you know, it's a guy who's, you know, roughly the same point in life as where you are. So how coincidental is it that he looks very much like you?
Oh, it's no coincidence at all. It was totally intentional. It was totally intentional, because everything that his perception is there is mine. So I'm thinking, I can't put this in somebody who doesn't look like me and put my voice into it. I wasn't writing a character. I was putting my perception in a lot of things there.
Yeah.
So there's no coincidence
at all.
Well,
and what was hilarious was when I was looking at Motor City's site, and before I saw your name, I go, that's got to be Ted. So, what's it like, you know, where you're both writing and drawing, you know, everything? It's a solo project. You know, you're doing the writing, you're doing the drawing, the inking, everything.
Right.
It's not your norm for the comic book industry these days.
Right.
So how is that process for you?
It's a blessing and a curse. It's both good and bad. The good part is that, obviously, it's like, you know, as I'm writing the story, I'm kind of envisioning how it's going to be artwork-wise, so I'm kind of like writing it and drawing it at the same time. I'm not drawing. Some people are like, oh, he just draws what he wants. It's like, no, I come up with a story first, and then I draw the story based on what I want it to be visually, not changing the story because I don't want to draw this or that. It's kind of like I'm really hard on myself. So it's like, if I wanted to get off easy, I'd make it a polar bear in the snow kind of story. But I really like write heavy stuff, so I like that. I kind of force myself to draw something not comfortable. On the other note, by not having someone else write the dialogue, write the story itself, the inspiration level sometimes gets really heavy, and you kind of sit there and you go, is this making any sense? Is this working? Where if you're working with a writer, you can kind of like work together and feed off like, oh, how about this or how about that? I'm like start talking to myself in the middle of the night, and I'm like, what do you think? I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work. And it doesn't really work that well. You kind of sound a little nutso.
Do you work with an editor?
Laura edits the books. But what she does is she basically proofreads the books.
Okay.
So Jim Valentino is the publisher. He basically goes, do what you want. And Laura says, this needs a comma or this needs a hyphen. And that's it. Nobody edits the books. I edit the books on that level. Primarily because when I worked back in doing transit, I was working with this guy, Lou Stathis. Great guy. Passed away since then. But he taught me how to be an editor.
Okay.
So I know how to kind of proof my own stuff and how to look at it from that perspective. So I kind of do everything at that point, you know.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because while you did have these talking animals, well, in the commission that you did for me, you draw things in such proportion that they are not natural, but they come across as being very, very possibly, you know, very possible something that could be real.
Right.
I mean, how the hell do you do that? Because it doesn't make sense, you know. I mean, and everything from the mouth at the end of the elephant trunk, which creeped me out, because I'm like, isn't that the nose? You know? But, you know, and it is such a weird dichotomy of pieces and parts of all these other things. What the hell's going on in your brain, man?
I don't know. Sometimes I think I need to go in and get it, like, checked, but then other times I'm thinking, no, the mystery's fun. You talk about, like, the elephant, the mouth and the elephant. There is a certain... If this explains that, but in a different with a different subject, I don't really do a whole lot of referencing. I mean, unless I'm looking at my face when I'm drawing the picture of me and I want to see what I look like, so I'm like screaming in a mirror and I'm looking like that. But if I'm drawing a car, it's probably not a car that really exists, but it's my car. It's within my world. So if I'm drawing a talking animal or like the commission that the sketch we did, it's this bulbous kind of like, you know, fleshy, weighty thing. But it doesn't exist in the real world. My mind just looks at it and thinks like, well, what if it did? And you take the physics of what a human or an animal would look like, although the animals are standing on their hind legs and wearing really nice shoes, you think, well, a person wearing shoes would be the same, only they'd be bent a different way. I don't know. I can't even explain to you that I have a reasoning in my head. I just know that I look at everything as being real, whether it be an exact car or my car.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why your books work so well, because there's so much weight to the reality that it's based in.
Right.
So, you know, and that's what grabbed me.
Cool.
So, now you've got a new project coming up.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about
it? It's coming in late fall. It's called Poodwaddle, which is P-O-O-D-W-A-D-D-L-E. It is a slang word that means basically somebody who talks and goes off about something and sounds completely like convincing, but they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about.
You know, it's funny because when I saw that, I was like, he's talking about podcasters.
That's hilarious. It's like, wait a minute, there you go.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do is you talk about podcasters, what the basis of the story is that it's about the comic industry. And I've always wanted to do a story that basically there's so many things that happen in the comic industry that people see the books, but you don't know what happens. And almost every book, every series, all the companies have these horrible horror stories or bizarre stories that went on behind the scenes that ended up becoming the book. And I'm not even talking about the writer artist. I'm talking about the editors and the publisher and the printing department and the bullpen, parties afterwards, meetings in the office. So I've experienced so many. So what I did is I came up with a story where the central character, whose name is Poodwaddle, is an artist, putting my perspective, and experiences all these things, but I've kind of like merged them all, so it's not an exact timeline.
Right.
So like if something happened in one office and then a year later happened in another office, but it was the same people involved, I've now kind of put them together so that it all encompasses that same feel, and then there's a separate story going through it. But basically the whole series is going to be ongoing vignettes, but with a story theme of all the crap that goes on in the comic book industry. You know, it's like names will be changed, so I don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
What about likenesses?
Likenesses, if you know the person, you'll get what I'm doing.
Okay.
You know, there's people in there that may, you know, some guy who's like had a spiky hair, he'll have spikes. He won't have a neck in my drawing. You know, he'll say he's about 3 feet tall, but you'll know it's him. So nice.
One other question, you know, why the Golden Age format? Why the size of the books?
When I was doing Mondo, they imaged Jim Valentino, goes, why don't we do Golden Age? And I'm like, okay. It was just like just something they wanted to try. And the marriage between my work and that format just clicked. Jim was saying, he's like, you know, this stuff really works that way. I said it was comfortable for me to draw in that format. I love the format just because it's a slight difference in size, obviously. But for me, artistically, it just kind of gives me a little bit more room in a certain way. So I just basically stuck with it.
Well, and I the reason I like it, you know, as a fan of that for you, is you have such detailed line work that you can really, that larger format.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw me yesterday looking through your original pages. I'm about 4 inches away, like checking out all the little details. I love it. So, yeah. I mean, it's great. But, hey, I want to thank you again so much, Chad. It's been a pleasure. And so where can people find you online?
I have a blogs. You know, started a blog. Yep. I don't really do anything with Facebook or anything like that. I feel like I'm too old for that kind of thing. You know, plus, my brain just holds so much knowledge. So I have a blog, and it's, what was the address? Is it tedmckeever.blogspot.com? So it's tedmckeever.blogspot.com.
Cool.
And it's just basically, the way I word it is like, it's basically musings and my interests. It's nothing but me talking about the creative process, talking about where con I'm going to be at, any weird pictures that I get, I kind of throw it up there. So to me, it's just kind of like a little like drive-through window of what's going on in my head or what's going on with the project. So
nice. All right, well, guys, if you haven't already, check out Ted's work. You will thank me later.
Thanks, so, man.
Thanks, Ted.
No, thank you. Thank you.
All right, we're back with Tom Rainey. Tom, how's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for talking.
So, you've got a new creator-owned project coming out that we're kind of curious about. So, can you fill us in a little bit?
Absolutely. I'm part of an anthology book that is called Broken Frontier. We've got 40 different creators, pretty much all indie guys. Quite a few very established, very talented people. It's on Kickstarter right now, winding up its last week. And it's a big 200-page hardcover anthology. And everybody's doing different stories, about 20 different stories.
Wow.
I'm doing mine with Greg Pak. We're doing a story called The Phantom Limb Ghost Puncher.
Okay.
He sees dead people, and he punches them.
That is awesome. How'd you get pulled into this project?
Well, I'd worked with Greg on The Hulk a little bit.
Yep.
A couple years ago, and we've been wanting to do something together since. We were just kind of messing around on Twitter 2 years ago, just throwing stuff back and forth at each other, and that came out of the ether.
Okay, now I'm kind of curious, what were some of the other thoughts that went into that? Because this is really off the walls. Is there any other thoughts that you like were thinking of? Well, maybe not like a ghost puncher. Maybe he was going to be a Karate Kid or something like that.
I don't remember the specifics. Greg's a little bit clearer on that. Yeah, you know, my memory's shot for years. But, you know, I just have a lot of fun working with him. You know, that was my main reason to want to do it is, you know, Greg's fantastic.
Yeah. You know. Now, when you work with him, what's it like as far as the script to, you know, how detailed is he with the script when it comes to you? I mean, is he weighing a lot? Is he a very visual person when it comes to that? Or does he let you have a lot of fun and play with it?
He writes full script. It's got everything that you need there. He does think visually. He's a filmmaker as well.
Okay.
He writes in a manner that gets the idea across very clearly. Never a problem working out what he's going for.
Do you personally prefer, you know, as an artist, would you rather that there's tons and tons of detail and they're very specific, or do you like it where it's a little bit more loose for you to play with?
I've worked both ways, and you know, I enjoy both a lot. If it's very sparse, you know, there's a certain freedom to that. But it's also nice to have a good, solid, you know, jumping off point as well.
Right.
So long as it's not with the intent that everything has to be exactly like this.
Yeah.
Either way requires a certain degree of freedom.
Okay.
So, so long as they're open to that, it's all good.
Yeah.
Have you ever had something where you were just so off in your vision that had to totally redo it, or is it usually...
No. I've been very fortunate and worked with, great writers. Yeah, and all of them have been very, giving people that that appreciate collaboration. So it's been good.
How long does it normally take you to do, we'll just start with a page, compared to a full book?
It really depends on the page. I try to keep it around a page a day, but, sometimes it goes a little more, sometimes it goes a little less.
Yeah.
I've done, 3 pages a day at times, and I've done a page in 3 days.
Right.
So, yeah, it really depends on the project.
Yeah. Are there any projects that you would love to do? Do you have a wish? You've been around how long now? You've been in this industry for years.
It's been a little while.
Yeah. So, are there any things out there that you're like going, man, I really want to do this, and you still haven't been able to?
Yeah. I'd still, love to do Commandy or the New Gods over at DC.
Yeah.
I'd love to get my hands on the Eternals over at Marvel.
I'd love to see them come back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's great stuff. I like the big concept stuff. And I know it's never going to happen, but I'd love to do Micronauts at Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. You need the combination of the two. Yeah.
So, Tom, you already mentioned the Kickstarter. Where else can people find you online?
I'm on Facebook under my name. And I'm on Twitter at TomRaney_art.
All right. Perfect.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, man.
Oh, great. Great.
All right. Derek and Tony here on the convention floor with Joe Prado. And we got to hang in a panel with you yesterday during the Brits versus the Brazils. How do you feel about your victory?
I don't know. I think it was unfair.
What was unfair about it?
Well, they're so much fun, but they voted that we draw better, but we're more professionals.
Well, we had to take the entertainment value in consideration, too. That's why it was a split decision.
I would have voted for them, Simon Beasley's, for fuck's sake, yeah. I know.
Well, I just want to let you know, I voted for you guys.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Yep,
thank
you. I'm on your side.
I was the traitor. I voted for the Brits. but yeah, that was
a lot of fun, though.
That was. Have you done one of those before, Sketch Battle?
I did one against Ivan.
Oh, against Ivan.
Against Ivan.
Okay.
Yeah, in Toronto two years ago.
Who won that one?
Him. I'm the inker. Come on, he's the penciler.
I don't know though. This one, he was copying you a lot on what you were drawing, though.
Yeah, that was actually one of the most fun parts, is seeing you guys looking over each other's shoulders to see who's drawing what.
Yeah, so. It was super fun. Yeah.
So, Joe, what are you working on right now?
Ivan and I were working on Cyborg.
Yep.
The new series that hits the stands in July.
In July. Okay.
Yeah, the writer is David Walker.
Okay.
Who wrote Shaft for Dynamite. He's awesome. Okay,
yeah.
Trust me, many people are going to be surprised. Okay,
yeah.
Trust me. Okay, it's really good. And also, we got a new colorist on board.
Okay.
Okay, his name is Adriano Lucas.
Okay.
He does colors for Skybound.
Yeah.
Okay, and also for Dynamite.
All right.
He's a great guy, and it's going to be a good-looking book.
Nice.
Trust me.
Now, going back to what we saw yesterday, what you could do in a minute was amazing. So, what's a typical day for you? Obviously, you're putting more detail within a page for the comic books, but, how long does it take you to do a page? What's your process like?
Every morning I wake up between 5 and 5:30 in the morning. That's when I start. I make coffee and then I start. Okay? Everything is quiet, no one to bug you, around that. And, I always try to do one page by lunchtime.
Okay.
Okay. If I do something more, it's a victory for me. Okay. Because Ivan puts a lot of details on his pencils, and I kind of amplify that, I'm a detail freak.
Yeah.
Okay. Despite the fact that I can do, super fast drawings, but those are drawings. Okay.
Yeah. There's a difference between a sketch and a finished product.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the finished product, it takes way more time, you know.
What's your approach when you're inking a page? And actually, specifically with Ivan, I mean, how long have you guys been working together?
It's going to complete 7 years now.
Okay. So, I mean, at this point, you guys understand, it's a partnership.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What's your approach when you're sitting down to a page? I mean, how do you go about inking? Because inking is one of these things that, as the more I've gotten into books, the more I've really started to learn where the differences are. So how do you go about it?
Well, you have to think that I'm also a penciler.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And so I bring to the table my experience as a penciler as well. And I've always inked my own stuff.
Okay.
You know, at least for the Brazilian market at first.
Right.
Okay. Nowadays, if I do, on the past 5-6 years, if I draw something for the U.S. market, I'm going to ink it.
Yep.
Okay. But for the Brazilian market, I used to work as an illustrator and comic book artist for the past... I started 22 or 23 years ago.
Okay.
Okay. And, well, when I became a professional inker, I brought that experience to the table. But I don't try to think too much. It's not like, you know, rock science for me. You know, I just sit there and I look at the page and go. You know, that's it. You know?
Is there a focal point that you start with? Are you working top to bottom, or are you just going, I'm going to start here? You kind of pick a random spot.
Usually I go first for the fun panels, okay?
Okay.
The ones that I know that I'm going to be fast on them and they're going to be fun to ink. You know?
Yep.
And I usually do, like, first, you know, like, outlines, so I separate the depths, you know, on the scene, and then I start to put the details.
Okay.
You know, and last the background. You know? That's it. You know?
Now, with convergence going on right now, you obviously have to know some of the things that are going on within.
Yeah.
How, like, obviously you can't tell us that, but, like, do you know how that's going to end, or do you only know, like, a little bit of before?
I don't know the ending.
But I know a lot of it.
I know a lot of what didn't come out yet, you know, because I run a studio that represents a lot of Brazilian artists and some foreigner, you know, artists, and we do a lot of stuff for DC and for Marvel and other companies too. So I have to coordinate all that. So all the reference material comes to me, and then I start to spread things out, you know, among the artists. And I'm a fan, so...
That's what's going to be my next question. Does that take away from you being a fan, knowing what it's going to be before you read it?
For me, never. Dude, I love comics. Trust me. When I was 4, I told my parents that I wanted to draw Batman and Superman. They were terrified. Okay.
So, what are some books that you haven't drawn yet or worked on that you would absolutely love? I mean, do you have a list of your top ones?
I have lots. Usually, you know, like B, C listers, you know?
Yeah.
Characters that not everybody know, you know, and cares about. Like, you know, Iron Fist that I said on the panel, Doctor Strange. Do you guys remember Orion? No, not Orion. Arion, the mage from Atlantis, from DC?
No, I don't.
No?
No.
Okay. Back in the 80s. Okay.
Okay.
Back in the 80s. That character too, Demon, you know, Richard Dragon, you know.
Yeah.
Also some classic ones like Prince Valiant. I love Prince Valiant. I got into comics through Prince Valiant.
Okay.
You know, so for me, it's a super cool character.
Are there any characters in your head that you're, like, thinking, man, I would love to start doing my own book? And
oh, yeah. I have personal projects, you know. And everything's on the shelf for now, you know. Because we have a lot to do, but maybe someday, you know. Yeah, well, I'd love to.
Well, Joe, I'd love to sit here and talk to you, but we're holding up your line. So
okay,
we're gonna let you
that's
go.
Fine. That's fine.
But right. Thank you so much.
Oh,
man.
Come on. Thank you, guys.
All right. Cheers.
All right, so we are here right now with Mr. Tim Townsend. Tim, how's it going, man?
So far, so good.
Are you surviving after the karaoke last night?
A little bit. The voice is shot. I should have hung it up after the first night.
Hey, you were rocking the mic this weekend.
So, Tim, I'm familiar with your work as an anchor, primarily with Chris Machado on X-Men.
Yeah.
And so what is that like, working on a project and a property
that huge?
Oh my gosh, it's, I mean, I got to go back 20 years to really kind of reconnect with that sense of awe. But no, it's amazing, you know, working on something that you grew up with, that molded you as an artist and as a human being even, you know, growing up as a little kid, this is the only stuff I read. So it's a lot of little pinch me moments, you know?
Yeah. Now, explain if you could, you know, when you're getting Chris's artwork, how long have you guys worked together?
I've been with Chris longer than I've been with my wife. We've been together like 17 years now.
So, I mean, at this point, you guys have a really good feel of how you're going to, you know,
work. We can finish each other's sentences. I mean, yeah.
I always like to finish each other's sandwiches. But, you know.
Well, that too.
Yeah. So, I mean, are there times when he might, like, will he ever say, hey, look, I kind of left this for your interpretation?
One of the reasons I've been able to maintain some sort of sense of fulfillment artistically working with Chris for so long, because I'll tell you this right now, if I wasn't working with Chris, I probably wouldn't be inking. I'd just be doing, you know, full illustration. Chris has always trusted me artistically to the point of, we've developed a shorthand having worked together for so long. He doesn't need to go in and, you know, ink with a pencil. There's times where he's giving me breakdowns. There's times where it's called for all different levels. A lot of times I'll actually sit down with a pencil before I even start inking.
Oh, wow.
So I really get to participate in the art, and he's always trusted me to do that. And he kind of knows what he's going to get. And it fulfills me artistically. It's more than just inking, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that we've learned recently from doing a lot of interviews with people is how much more inking tells the story than just the pencils. Like, before I was just like, well, that's just a tracer, it's not the real artist. But then realizing the shading and the depth, sure, of the characters and stuff, is that kind of one of the more reasons why you've gone into that instead of just doing illustration?
Well, I mean, you know, there's inking and then there's embellishing. Inking is essentially tracing. You know, you add a little line weights here and there, but, you know, you're not really, in terms of art, you're not really bringing that much to the table. And, you know, that's the difference between an inker and an embellisher. The embellishers are the guy, you know, take like a Danny Mickey or a Scott Williams. I mean, you know, look at Jim Lee's pencils, as brilliant as they are, and then look at, you know, the finished inks, it's so drastically different. Scott brings so much to the table. There's a reason, you know, Jim's held on to him for, you know, geez, what, 25 years or however long it's been. You know, I'd like to think Chris saw that with me. And there's a very few guys in this business, and Scott Williams and I have had these conversations, where they respect us artistically, and they know what we bring to the table, and they know that after such a long time of working together, we're actually part of that visual that they're known for. They get the glory, and that's fine. You know, if you have an ego, you don't ever get into inking
or coloring.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of art, though, they know what we, you know, what we're bringing to the table. And I don't mean that from a egotistical standpoint.
Right.
There's a lot of respect. There's a lot of mutual trust and respect going on. It's a beautiful thing. Think of one other art form that really has this level of collaboration.
Yeah.
With the finished product, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, by the time you've got your pencils,
yeah,
your inks, your colors, and then your letters on top of it, because the letters are just as much a part of the layout and art.
The closest analogy I could find would be like a beautiful duet with a pair of, you know, accomplished singers. You know?
Yeah.
They both bring something to the table, and they create that sum that's greater than the parts.
Yeah. So, what, as far as your processes, I mean, there are so many, I'm just starting to learn about how many different ways there are to ink. I mean, do you have a specific way that you like to go about? I mean, whether it's brushes, pens, you know, all the other...
Yeah, I mean, I've got my set tools. I mean, I'm about 75% brush, 15% nib, and then the rest, whatever else happens to be laying around. As far as the process goes, I don't have a set way that I sit down at a page and I start with this and then I do this. I just kind of, however I'm feeling... If I start out the day with my hand nice and steady, or if I need to ease into it and kind of, you know, get my flow going, I really don't have a process. I'm the worst teacher. I've had people a million times tell me how you do this. I honestly really don't know. I just kind of go. I sit down and I do it. I crank on an audiobook and just kind of go.
Well, I was gonna say. So obviously, being in the comic book world, you've got to be a comic book fan. Yeah. Is there anything particular that you're reading or that you enjoy?
Um, obviously, I'm a comic book fan. I don't read that many comic books currently. I haven't even walked into a comic book shop in like 2 years. You know, I'm 45 now. I've got, you know, I can see the retirement light at the end of the tunnel. I've got other stuff I want to do. I've got kids. You know, you do this long enough and you put on all these hours. You're sitting at the board, you know, 10, 11 hours a day. You get a little free time. I want to go do something else.
Right.
You know, I'm not, my instinct isn't to go, I'm going to go grab a comic book. And, you know, and it's sad. It's actually, it bums me out. You know, I always said that when I went professional, I stopped creating art. You know, you're creating a commodity once you start, you know, doing it on a certain level. And every now and then, like right now, we've had a little bit of downtime in between projects. I haven't had this much fun in years because I've just been drawing for fun, for me, doing commissions and stuff for conventions. And I have not had this much fun in years. And I'm not even aware of what I can do now. And yeah. There's been a couple of pieces where I sat down and for once in the first time in years, I'm like, I actually like that. You know, it's like, wow, I did that. You know, nice. Something that I actually was like, okay, imagine what I could do if I had even more time, because I know I'm getting ready to get slammed with our new project, so it might be another year before I really get a solid 2 or 3 weeks to just sit down and draw for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I haven't really ever asked anybody before from an artist's perspective, with things going and digital growing,
yeah.
Do you have a preference? Do you see a difference when you're looking at a printed book versus a digital? You know, I mean, does it change what you're doing?
Are you speaking process-wise, or like looking at a comic book online digitally versus holding one in your
hand? Yeah, the final product to look at.
I'm a traditionalist from beginning to end, and not in an elitist sort of way. Like, I don't have any issues with people who are more digital oriented. Right. That's fine. Personally, I have to hold it in my hand, or I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
That being said, the digital comics are absolutely necessary for this. You know, this industry to grow at this point. I mean, it's absolutely necessary, and I support it 1,000%.
Well, I've got friends that are there strictly buying digital only.
Yeah.
And then there's me, where I'll hardly ever buy a digital book.
Yeah.
You know.
I've never bought one. I mean, I've read them before just to kind of check it out and have the experience and see how I felt. And I mean, it really left me pretty cold.
Well, I guess, Tim, if people want to check you out online, where should they go?
I use my DeviantArt site is sort of my, I don't have like a formal webpage. I'm at www.timtownsend.deviantart.
All right, Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I just never use it, but I'm really big on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. So.
My pleasure.
All right.
Thanks, Tim.
All right, guys.
And there you have it. Thank you, everyone, who allowed us the time to do an interview. We apologize for the technical difficulties on our end that didn't get it recorded and uploaded. But there is always next year. A major thanks to Motor City Comic Con for all that you do in allowing us to run rampant around the con floor conducting these interviews. Thank you to the Drunk on Comics family and all of our friends that we get to see every year at this convention. We can't wait until next year to do it all over, but until then, we have my fridge full of beer that everyone will raid in the comics you love for more Drunk on Comics and drunken antics throughout the summer.